Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. Jamie Swift is talking to Central Library, the Vimy Myth, and I urge you to go and attend that 7 o'clock Central Library, the 18th, Tuesday. and by the way, today is the anniversary of the Bay of Pigs, rather important event. Cubans celebrated. This was a case of imperial arrogance. Odd little detail. While we're waiting to be joined by Safra Benke, just tell you that somebody quoted Jack Kennedy the other day. Jack Kennedy was the president of the United States, liberal, and when the Bay of Pigs was launched. And fortunately for Cuba, the people rose and the army defended them, the country, and the invaders were defeated and captured. And it was a dark day in Washington. And they said, but the poll numbers for Jack Kennedy went up because he gave this pained speech about what had happened. Not that he knew, but he gave this speech. And his poll numbers went up, and he told the people around him, this is part of the historical record, he says, if you're president, most people are unhappy with you, but if you really, really screw up, they will support you. So he says, That's all I learned from the Bay of Pigs. This is the Taylor Report, 89.5 FM, and I think we are joined by Zafar Benkash. Are you there, Zafar?
Yes, I am. Hello, Phil.
Well, thank you very much, Zafar. We've just been talking about these shocking stories, and they come every 24 hours now, and all of them rather frightening. I want to ask some of the background stories. The other day, our prime minister, and we've been talking about it earlier, he came out after the first report of chemical attack in Syria, and he said, that's terrible, it's awful, and there needs to be a thorough investigation and to determine who is responsible, and they should be punished, which is, that's rather statesmanlike. Now, about 24 hours went by. In the interim, the president of the United States struck Syria in an illegal attack on a sovereign country. And then the prime minister was asked, what do you think? And he said, oh, well, we agree with it. And then they said, but you said there should be an investigation. What changed your mind? What evidence? And he said, we have faith in our allies. So Canada, in a sense, has a government that seems to just pick up the phone and do what they're told. What did happen, in your view, why are they able to get away with this thing of lining up everyone behind what apparently is just a propaganda hoax?
Well, first of all, as far as the chemical weapons attack is concerned, the claim was made that this attack had occurred between 6 to 6:30 a.m., on April the 4th, whereas the Syrian planes had bombed the locality there sometimes around midday. So obviously the Syrian planes were not involved in this particular episode, number one. Mm-hmm. Secondly, Syria has no chemical weapons. In fact, they have all been handed over in August of 2013, when Russia, in fact, brokered the agreement. And the Syrian government agreed to hand over all of its chemical weapons, as well as destroy all of its chemical weapons-making facilities. And this has been confirmed by the Council for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons, or mm-hmm. the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. They have confirmed that Syria has not only handed over all of its chemical weapons, but destroyed all its facilities. So this allegation against the Syrian government is completely false. In fact, the only people that seem to have chemical weapons in Syria, and what does not seem to bother the United States or other of its Western allies, are the terrorist groups. Mm-hmm. And that's what really seems to have happened, that these terrorist groups are in possession of chemical weapons, and it is those chemical weapons that led to the deaths of the civilians in Khan Sheikhoun. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the United States government is concerned, obviously, you know, it has always acted as an outlaw. You see, as you mentioned, attacking a sovereign country targeting its Air Force base and then killing 11 people. It's not only a violation of international law, it's in fact a crime because if, let's say, as Trump claimed that it was from that air base that the planes had flown, that would suggest that obviously there are chemical storage facilities over there. There have been no chemical storage facilities there. Nobody has been harmed there. Nobody was wearing any masks or anything like that. And so the entire allegation that is made against Syria is completely false.
And it means the attacker knew that, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. They were fully aware of it.
Completely. Do you remember the old remark somebody made that we know that Saddam Hussein does not have nuclear weapons because if he did, you wouldn't attack him?
Exactly. So, and you know, you quite rightly pointed out the contradiction in the statement of our own prime minister that one day he says, well, there should be an investigation. This is something that Syria has called for. This is something that Russia has called for. This is something that Iran has called for. And in fact, even at the UN Security Council, there was a push to have an investigation, but the Americans are just simply not interested in an investigation because that would then expose their aggression. And in fact, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, seems to outdo her predecessor, Samantha Power, by saying that, well, we will do whatever we like. And this
Indeed.
Is just the beginning.
They're not answerable. Once again, they're telling the world from the Security Council seat that they don't have to follow law or ordinary procedure. You know, it sort of was reflected in that odd moment when Mr. Lavrov sat down with the Tillerson and the American reporters began to shout questions. And he said, where were you raised? because they just don't think anything applies to them.
Exactly. This is the problem. You see, unfortunately, the U.S. thinks that it can do whatever it likes. I mean, we know last Thursday they dropped the largest bomb, non-nuclear bomb, in Afghanistan in a place called Archin, which is right close to the border with Pakistan. Mm. Now, they claim that they dropped this bomb on a mountain where there were caves and hideouts of ISIS, etc. But who knows? I mean, how do we know that?
Yes. I saw a reporter say that it's one of the most remote areas. It's impossible to go there practically, unless you're in for a long, long trip. So they can say anything they want.
Exactly. That's what it is. And so I think that both the U.S. Missile attack on Syria, as well as this 10-ton bomb that they dropped on Afghanistan, I think these were meant to signal to North Korea and to any other country that would stand in the way of U.S. aggression, that if you don't do what the U.S. demands of you, then that's what you're going to face. Mm-hmm. And so we are heading for a very, very dangerous situation. Both in terms of the manner in which the U.S. Continues to attack other countries, and secondly, the manner in which the U.S. has assembled a huge armada around North Korea in the Korean Peninsula. And Trump was very proudly proclaimed that this is a very powerful, armada.
He called it an armada. I noticed that. I don't know if he understands. People talk about how ignorant he is of things. One of the things that I could share with him as a fellow American raised there, we only know the word armada because the Spanish armada sank. That's all the only time we ever use the word. Otherwise, there's no armada in the English story. We love it, but the Spanish fleet sailed into a storm and was never seen again.
Exactly. Within that Trump's armada, there are nuclear-powered submarines as well as submarines carrying nuclear weapons.
Yes.
And, the Americans are saying, well, if North Korea were to carry out another test or a nuclear test, then that is going to be a major provocation.
Yes.
Now, okay, if the North Koreans carry out a test, why is that a provocation? And yet America assembling a huge armada, nuclear-armed armada around North Korea, that's not a provocation. I mean, this is just mind-boggling.
No, that's the part that makes you and disappoints you that there is not a government here that even quibbles about it. Instead, they knuckle under. And a matter of fact, it's embarrassing to watch the Europeans fall in line. Now, but we're speaking to Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. And I have to make sure I ask you these things. You referred to Iraq. The prime minister says we have our troops there and helping. And he says the Peshmerga. Iraq is a government. Why does he feel he has to use the word Peshmerga?
You see, since the U.S. Occupation or invasion and then occupation of Iraq in March of 2003, the U.S. and its Western allies have deliberately pursued a policy of dividing Iraq into three separate entities. And the first entity that they created was the government of Iraqi Kurdistan, which is in fact a de facto independent state. Mm-hmm. And so the Kurdish fighters are called Peshmergas. And unfortunately, it seems to me that the Iraqi government, the central government in Baghdad, also seems to have accepted the de facto partition of their country insofar as the Kurdish region is concerned. And that is a very, very dangerous development because if the Kurds were to establish a separate entity or a separate country of their own, let's say in Iraq, then it would immediately impact the region in or the Kurdish region in Syria as well as in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And so we will see three, in fact, additionally two other countries, Iran as well as Armenia, because
so in a sense, yeah. So Canada is actually involved in some mischief when it does this, because for the general public, we think, oh yes, we have forces in Iraq, but then they talk about this, it indicates they're involved in something more sinister.
Yes, of course, because the Canadian forces are actually involved with the Kurdish troops. Mm-hmm. They're saying that they're training them,
yes,
but
and wear their insignia.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We were told on this program by, I think it's Patrick Taylor of the magazine in Ottawa, a military writer. He said that he's visited there, and you don't see the Iraqi flag. There is no Iraqi flag in northern Iraq.
Exactly. That is basically the Kurdish government in northern Iraq basically operates as an independent entity. Mm-hmm. And it continues to make deals with other countries on its own, quite separate from the jurisdiction of the Iraqi government. So they are acting as a de facto independent state.
Yeah. This is Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Here's a sensitive question. Why is a well-known Shia leader, Sadr, why has he commented negatively about President Assad of Syria?
Well, you're referring to Muqtada al-Sadr. He's a sort of, you know, young Shia leader. He's considered something of a loose cannon in Iraq. He you know, tends to be against the Iraqi government. He sort of he's trying to assert his own authority and influence. And although there are Iraqi militias that are operating inside Syria to help the Syrian government, Muqtada al-Sadr is opposed to that. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, in Iraq, you know, this is one of the sad realities that the religious leadership in Iraq is not as sophisticated politically as it is, for instance, in Iran or in Lebanon. So these Shia leaders in Iraq tend to follow a quietist approach. They don't want to interfere in any political affairs. Although one is at a loss to figure out as to how they can separate the two when, in fact, as far as Islam is concerned, the state and politics and religion are all interwoven into the fabric. Mm-hmm. And so they are really taking a position that runs counter to the major trend in the yes. Muslim world. And yeah. they seem to be isolated in that sense.
Well, that, I'm really glad I asked you that. Now, we have about a minute and a half or two to go. I want to ask you, what do you make of the Ahmadinejad announcing that he's going to contest the election? And he had already endorsed somebody. So tell us what you think is happening there.
Well, he actually explained. He said that, the reason why I threw my hat in the ring, incidentally, there are about 1,640 or so candidates that have registered, out of which 137 are women, by the way.
Why can't it be like America and just have two parties? It's a real democracy. Two parties.
Exactly.
Well, you have to be a millionaire to run. Go ahead.
Yes. So Ahmadinejad said that I registered myself because I want to help my friend, Muhammad Baqai, whose name he says that basically what happens is that when too many people register for the presidential race, then they begin to make deals with other candidates, so they throw their support behind them. So I think what he's trying to do is to line up his support behind his friend who had served as his vice president when Ahmadinejad was president. Mm-hmm. So that's the game that seems to be at work here. But yeah. I doubt very much if his candidate really has a chance of winning, because there are two major candidates that are likely to be one of the winners. One is, of course, the existing president, President Hassan Rouhani, and the other is Hujjatul Islam Raisi, who is the head of Razavi Foundation in Mashhad. He's a very popular figure and very well known, very popular among the rural masses. So I think these are the two candidates one should be looking for.
Well, I'm very glad we asked you. You're the man who knows. Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Thank you very, very much, Zafar.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Well, you've been listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'll tell you again, Jamie Swift is speaking Tuesday, 7 o'clock, Central Library. Eric, thank you very much. And this is Phil Taylor. We'll see you next week.